Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another episode of the Self-Build Plus podcast, where we chat with self-builders, suppliers, and experts about all things home building and renovating in Ireland on both sides of the border. I'm Astrid Mattsson, your host and the editor of Self-Build Magazine. We're going to be joined by Roger O'Connor. He is from ROC Energy. He's an engineer. He's helped a lot of people apply for an energy grant from the Authority of Ireland. So those are the grants, the government grants, that help you improve the energy efficiency of your home. So clearly the reason people want to improve the energy efficiency of their home is to lower their fuel bills and also have a healthier home to live in. So Roger is actually just here to chat to us about what it takes to actually apply to one of these grants, because they're not as straightforward as you'd imagine. It's not a question of just getting cash in hand and go off and put a bit of insulation in your walls, unfortunately. So a bit more complicated than that. So Roger, welcome to the live. And we'll just start with which grants are actually available at the moment from the SEAI. I think there's three kinds. So if you could just give us a bird's eye view of those and which to whom they apply.
Cool. Thanks, Astrid. I'm an energy consultant. I've been in this space for longer than I'd like to admit, since 2004. And it's been an area that's been evolving. And to be fair, SEI, through the grants process, are very much a part of that. And I guess just to very briefly give an outline of what SEI are trying to do with the grants, before we kind of get too hot and heavy into what exactly they are. I'll say off the bat as well that the SEI grants, a lot of detail is up on the webpage already. A lot of stuff that we're going to touch on today is there. And as I'll probably repeat a number of times, probably through this as well, they're very good to contact, to be fair. So like SEI, the call line is there. It's 01808 2004. If anyone is looking for their phone number, that's theirs, not mine. And I think their lines are open like 9:30 to 5 or something like that. They are very good, to be fair, and they are there to help. The fundamental idea behind the grant is basically one of kind of two things. This is from my own opinion. I'm sure SEA might have a different formal opinion, but from what I can see, this is the objective. It's either to try to encourage you to do something that you would not necessarily otherwise do, or it's to enable you to do something that is otherwise too costly for you to do. So they're trying to either change your behavior in some way, or they're trying to encourage you or enable you to do something that you couldn't otherwise do. So that's the fundamental idea behind this. So I know we'll probably touch on things like who can avail of what grants and that type of thing. And there will be a disparity, and we'll kind of touch on why as well. But in short, like Astrid said, there are three basic avenues, is the easy way to explain it. Now, nothing about this is particularly straightforward, which is kind of where I come in and trying to help people navigate this particular line of things. But the three basic avenues, I'm literally going to scroll, I know you can't see this page, but I'm going to scroll for myself down through the SEI webpage, because they do explain it quite well. There are three basic varieties. The first variety is one that we won't talk about a heck of a lot now today, just because it's quite specialised. But it's the fully funded energy upgrade. Right now, initially, that does sound amazing. It's fully funded, right? There really is great resources there. And that is where the cost of the work and the management of the work and everything is handed off, okay? So that's managed through the SEAI agents themselves. This is particular for very certain people, largely trying to help maybe more vulnerable people, that type of thing. The list of people who are eligible for that kind of grant include people on fuel allowance, job seeker allowance for 6 months, working family payment, one parent family payment, and it kind of goes on in that kind of vein. So a certain group of people who might need additional assistance. That is for them. It's a bit more specialised. I won't go into it at great depth here today. The other two are the more mainstream ones. They're the ones you'll hear a lot more about. So in short, if you're a person who's looking to maybe avail of a grant, you have one of two roles that you're really going to be looking at. It's either going to be your individual grants or the one-stop shop, okay? And to very basically say it, the individual energy upgrade grants are a subset of the one-stop shop, okay? And you're going to be somewhere on one or the other, or maybe annoyingly enough, in between the two, okay? So basically, the individual energy upgrade grants are intended if you're doing one or two pieces of work. So something like additional roof insulation and or additional wall insulation. You don't have to do more than one. You can just do one and it's perfectly fine. So it can be the start of the journey. There are things, though, that are missing from that energy upgrade grants, which are included in the one-stop shop grants. So they are things like the ventilation allowance, or what's called the NVHR grant, are windows. Window upgrade is also not included in the individual grants, but it is included in the one-stop shop grants. I don't go too far down, it's like a monologue here, but I'm going to give you a very brief descriptor as to what the difference is between the two.
Yeah.
The individual energy upgrades, it's basically best described as a basket of upgrades. So from the basket, you can take one or many, whichever you prefer yourself. You can take one today and then do nothing, and then take another one next year and then do nothing and take another one, whatever, 2 or 3 years on, if the grant is still available. So it's entirely up to you. The basic process, now, there is a slight caveat to this, and I will get onto it in a second, but the basic process is you engage with SEAI first. I can't stress that enough. Engage with SEAI first to apply for the grant. Once you have been approved for the grant, you then go and find an approved registered contractor. It can't just be, you know, Roger down the street with the van, right? Can't be that. It has to be someone who's registered with SEAI to do this work. And that's for a few different reasons. One of the critical reasons, in my opinion, is because they're a trained professional, they should know what they're doing, the work should be of good quality standard. So it's important that that kind of control is there.
Theoretically, they're not all, but listen, that's just the beast. They're not all, they don't have all great standards. The SEAI does try to help them, and they are, yeah, there is confidence to have, but it's not fine. You can't believe that they're going to be really excellent at, you know, they're on the what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. Like, just because they're on the registered list does not guarantee they're good.
Yeah.
But not being on the registered list, you know, kind of goes the other direction. Yes, I'd absolutely agree with it. Like, in terms of, sorry, I'm going to go down a bit of a rabbit hole here very quickly. And if I do talk too quickly, by the way, apologies, I'm Cork, so that kind of happens, but I'll try and tone it down, you know, Astrid especially. I try and talk slowly for Astrid. I talk too fast sometimes. But with the quality approach around SEAI, it is your own responsibility to source a quality contractor. So like getting any contractor, it's always a good idea to get references, get proof of previous work, ideally, you know, kind of not directly from them, ideally indirectly through other people, not just, oh, you know, I did this work for Michael, here's Michael's number, he's very happy with me. Sure, for all you know, Michael is his drinking buddy, you know, you just don't know. So you're better off trying to find quite frankly, what I do sometimes is I'll drive down the road and someone has done some really good work that I like, I visually like it, and I go, knock on the door, who did you work? Do you know, and just walk the streets a bit and try to get some ideas that way. So, but you're absolutely right, Astrid, like SEI aren't a guarantee of quality, but they're certainly a good step on the way. As an aside.
It's a good short list, let's say.
Yeah, exactly. Now, they also do have a quality team.
You have to use them, but yeah.
Yeah. But they have a quality team that do come and do spot inspections.
Yes.
On
people. Yeah.
So there is a bit of backup there. But I agree with you. You know, sometimes like registering isn't a horrible ordeal. So it's possible that they just register and they get through a net. You know, that is entirely possible. So always, you know, three quotes, proof of workmanship, all that kind of just good practice approach to getting in to be on. But basically, you engage, you know, a good contractor, ideally, to carry out the work identified. And then there's a slight difference in approach here, but basically you then engage a BOR assessor who comes and inspects the property to give you the new BOR rating. And basically what that is that's kind of the bookend for the objective as far as SEI are concerned. And SEI's objective in terms of the individual grants is that your property improves by a certain amount. So there is a step objective there that it has to achieve to be able to benefit from the grant. Now again, the registered contractors doing the work should advise you accordingly beforehand of, yes, if I do this work, you know, we'd all be good. The BOR assessor comes out, does the BOR assessor, issues a new one for the paperwork. We'll also actually do a kind of an artificial look back as if the work had not been done. And that's how they identify the gap. That's how they identify the improvement step. And then all the paperwork is submitted into SEI. If it is things like wall insulation or roof insulation, it's paper. It's done on paper, which is still confusing to a large degree as to why it's that way. Mainly it's because the grants have been around for so long that the system was originally set up on paper. It's still paper-based. I was mentioning earlier on there's a slight difference in some of them. The PV grant is different in this regards. It's all digital. So there's no paperwork in the same way.
Later.
Yeah. There's still checks and balances. It's still very good, but it's just all paper-based. Sorry, it's all electronic. So it's just a different approach.
Roger, you're talking about the individual grants there, which is the more straightforward application process. You're getting grant just for one thing. So it could be, or multiple things.
Or multiple, yes.
Grant for each individual thing. So you can do multiple things, but you just basically get your, so it's fairly straightforward in that sense then. So you just apply, you get the pre-BR, get your contractor, and then you pay in advance, is it? Don't you pay the contractor in advance?
Well, and then I suppose every contractor is probably individual, along with the BOR assessor as well.
Do you pay your contractor at the end of the works and then the SEAI refunds you?
Yes. I'm going to say yes.
In advance, sorry. I meant, yeah, so you're out of pocket for a little while, so you wait for the money.
Yeah, like you pay your deposit and then you obviously get the work done and then you pay end of stage payment and then you collect your reimbursement of grant. So
that's pretty straightforward. Are there any hoops to jump through for that? Is it complicated with that?
I suppose the only times I've seen difficulties around that is actually just, so there's two things really. One is where the work was done correctly, but really, I suppose it wasn't the right work. It wasn't the thing that was needed most. So just as a small example of that, somebody put in a large array of PV panels when their electricity use wasn't particularly high. But they had been convinced of the notion that having this amount of PV panels would be great for them. Whereas they had oil-fired heating and they had stoves and they had, you know, a lot of their car was diesel, for example, so they had very little electricity use. So the difficulty there was they fully complied with the grant, and they got the grant money and all the rest, but just the works that were done were not necessarily the most important thing they could have done to improve their, their particular requirement.
Panels being basically photovoltaic, so solar panels that generate electricity.
Yeah, exactly. And the only other one then I've seen is where the work that was done, I suppose it didn't qualify for that gap. It didn't create the sufficient gap to warrant the grant. So it just didn't comply with the grant requirements. And unfortunately...
What's the gap you have to achieve then? You have to
I never say numbers off the top of my head.
Yeah. Word we're getting wrong. But is it a question of, let's say, achieving a B2 energy rating?
No, not for the individual.
It's for how much you improve.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. There's basically a set level.
Whatever that is.
Yeah. Sorry. I know I should probably know that off the top of my head. I'm not one of those engineers who just numbers are off the top of his head. I have everything written down on sheets. Otherwise, I forget it. But yeah, there's a certain uplift. And the basic story is that it didn't meet the requirement. So the BR assessor went in and assessed the work, just didn't meet the requirements. Therefore, the grant didn't qualify or didn't get approved. And the homeowner was out of pocket at that point because they had paid the contract. The contract was gone. And the works that were done were grand, but they just didn't meet the requirements. So there's difficulty around that. And I suppose that's kind of where I'd urge people to, you know, make sure they're getting good advice, not from the people who are selling the solution or a solution. To move away then.
That advice then, with the BR assessor, would it be a question of, let's say if you're thinking I need to do something about this house, it's freezing or whatever, I want to do a bit of an energy upgrade. Would the first step then be to contact the BR assessor? That would be relatively independent because their only job is to do a building energy rating. Would that be the first step?
Well, I suppose the first step really is, especially if you purchased the house kind of in the last 10 years, there should be an existing BER with the property. And if you don't have it to hand, you go again to the SEI website. I don't work for SEI, by the way. I will sound like I do during the course of this conversation. But
agency, so yeah.
They're very good. So go onto their website. There's a section there for Find My BER. You put in your NPRN, which is a meter point reference number, which is on top of your electricity bill. It doesn't matter who you get electricity from. It's up there on the top right-hand side normally. It's like, it starts at 100 normally, right? Like 11-digit code. Put that in, you will get back your BER cert and report, okay? So if you already had done in the last 10 years, if it exists, it'll be up there. That's a starting point, because that gives you an indication as to what could be improved, you know? So if you without talking to anyone else, that's a starting point. The second one is, yes, you could engage the services of, you know, an engineer or a BER assessor or someone as was independent who is not linked with someone selling something other than maybe their services as to support a decision. The old process, when I say old, I mean back in 2011, 2012, I've been around that long, this kind of stuff, was that you needed a BR assessment first. The first step was get a BR assessment, then it was get the grant, then it was get another BR assessment. To be fair, to try and speed up the process, they got rid of the first BR assessment. You know, you can understand why it was taking a long time. So that became part of the gap, I suppose, where there was a lack of support and decision making, is probably how I would describe it. But generally, you know, yeah, getting some advice from someone who hasn't got direct skin in the game is beneficial to try and figure out what the first appropriate step is.
Energy assessor, like yourself, or someone, or they'd be quite focused on the BR only, I suppose. Or would a BR assessor be enough, or do you need someone more specialized?
Well, it I suppose we'll talk about heat pumps in a second, but generally is a good first step. Yeah, a BR assessor should be able to give you some guidance as to what could be done. It kind of depends on you know, some people
ask is the big thing, isn't it?
Just go and ask and see what you can find.
Okay.
I'll maybe come back and touch on the heat pump in a second. I'll jump straight over to One Stop Shop and then I'll come back onto heat pump just because it's relevant to both. The One Stop Shop service then is different. It's different in that it is intended to be much more streamlined. It's intended to be simpler, I suppose, in a way. Now it's much bigger. the process for One Stop Shop is you approach one of the now 15 registered One Stop Shop providers. So you can go to any one of 15 you wish, there's no restriction on it. And most of them serve all the country. Just have a quick look again on SEA's website to see who doesn't serve your area, but most of them serve all of the country, so it's not a problem. Engage with them. The first thing they'll actually do is the first step in that is an energy assessment. So it's almost like the old way. So it's back into that. You engage with one-stop shop provider. They will charge you an upfront fee for the one-stop shop initial energy assessment, which...
I'm scared already.
Well, it's something, like, again, they're all different, but something probably in around 800, 1,000 euro region, okay? Hmm. For which there is a grant, okay? So I think the grant is I have written down here just to guess I get asked. I think it's 250 euro, I think, is the grant back on that. I really should know that answer, but anyway, if I get what the number is.
But do you, even if you don't follow through with the...
No, only if you follow through.
Okay.
So that's where I suppose you need to be a bit careful in terms of which one are you heading down. Are you going down the individual energy upgrade route, or are you going down the one-stop shop route? Because the one-stop shop route is really good in terms of what it does, but the upfront cost is, you know, 800, 1,000 euro or something in that kind of region. There is a grant back for it. I know I should know it. I think it's 350 euro, something like that. Again, the number's up there on SEA website. That is a much more involved process. Cards on the table, I do that kind of work, so I'm not selling my services here, but I'm just letting you know that that work is much more involved. Like, that work involves sitting down with you as the homeowner, talking about where you want to get to, trying to figure out where you are now. And the end result of that process is that you get a shopping list. And this is the key thing. You get a shopping list from that energy assessor, who, by the way, is independent of the one-stop shop. So you go into the one-stop shop for stage one, but actually, quite frankly, in the background, they have to kick you back out to an independent energy assessor. That's a very important part of it, and they all do that. So it's all independent. The energy assessor then will advise you. They give you that shopping list of, okay, well, currently you're at a D1. You must get to a B2 or better. You can say you want to go to an A1, no problem, but you must get to a B2, okay, minimum. So they give you the shopping list. Once you have the shopping list, you can then go back to any or all of the 15. You don't have to go back to the same one-stop shop provider, although many people do, which is fine. There's no issue with that. And then you have your shopping list. So you can go back to all 15 and go, here's my shopping list. Please price accordingly. And you get your 15 quotes. Okay. Or your one quote, or two quotes. There's no minimum, maximum requirement. And then once you have that, you now have comparable options. And that's the really good thing about the one-stop shop, is there's comparable options. Once you have that, then you go down the road of one of the providers, select whoever you're going with, and then they will manage the grant process for all the work in the background. And what they want to do is they want to work with one person on site. Okay, so for self-build, this can be where it gets a little bit, you know, I suppose, in terms of your approach. If you're doing a self-build where you've gotten in one building contractor to do all the work, who's responsible for, you know, the... I'll use old language, sparkies and chippies, blockies, right? The electricians and the carpenters and the block layers. If you have one main contractor, there's a perfect marriage because you've got the one-stop shop, there's one entity, you have the building main contractor, one entity, there's a symbiosis, they work beautifully together. When you start having, you know, oh, I have Charlie for the block work, and then I got Michael for the insulation, and I got Jimmy for the wiring, and I have my buddy Mick coming over for the concrete there in 2 days, it starts to get more difficult, you know. And I must admit, at that point, it can be tricky because it doesn't necessarily suit this idea of, I guess, symbiosis between the two entities. You know, you have a one-stop shop here who's lean and mean and ready to go, and you have this kind of loosey-goosey approach on the other side.
But yeah, with one-stop shop, if you get the grant, you have to go one-stop shop. You can't go directly. Let it open. Yeah.
So you go through that one that provider, and that provider, the way they a lot of them work is they don't do everything in house. You can't expect them to be fair. So a lot of them, say for example, if they're an insulation company, they'll have associations with heat pump companies, you know, and they'll work together to deliver. So they'll deliver the heat pump, and then they'll hand over at some point to your plumber, to do the rest of the work. Do you know? So again, there's a marriage that they don't do everything. No, you can approach them and say, look, you're doing the ebook anyway. Will you consider doing all the plumbing work? Do you know? And yeah, you can go down that road if you like. But there's no necessity to. The requirement is pick up the ebook.
There. Do you mean if you need to upgrade the whole radiators or what? Or just connection? You mean connecting the heat pump to the house?
No. The connection would be done by the heat pump supplier.
Yeah.
But in terms of, yes, in terms of like if you're coming at it from a new build perspective, you know, the underfloor heating possibly or the new rads or whatever, like all the downstream, I suppose you probably call it,
yeah.
Plumbing work is your own plumber. Do you know what I mean? Like that's your own plumber.
You're not getting a grant, is that it?
No, there's no grant for the, I suppose, the radiator side of it.
Yeah.
There's a grant for the heat pump side of it.
The one-stop shop would only carry out the work that you're actually getting a grant for, which is just the unit.
Yeah.
And not like, well, how about the controls? The controls are typically included in the grant. So they will also do the controls for you, but they won't touch your ads or if you want to upgrade out underfloor or whatever.
Not as a direct part of the grant agreement. Now, to be fair, there are a lot of installers who would also do the extra work, but like that's part of an extra part piece of the contract. You know, that's not necessarily part of the main grant funded contract. It won't change your grant level is the basic answer to the conversation anyway. There is no grant available for things like rads and underfloor and that kind of stuff, just as this. But basically the idea being that the one-stop shop takes care of the management of it. You know, that you don't have to deal with all those nitty bitty intricacies of trying to coordinate people.
So
they deal with the site manager and you're away you go.
So even the electrician, because you need an electrician to connect your heat pump, that would be managed by the one that's an electrician for the heat pump.
Well, you'd probably have an electrician on site and they'll coordinate with them initially just to say, look, are you happy to wire up and you know, do both things work? Like I suppose at this point, almost each site is individual in terms of are the heat pump supplier happy that the site electrician can actually do this work? Because if they're not, then they'll do it themselves. Do you know? So there's probably a bit of devil in the detail on that side.
Okay, so then how much do you get for all of them? It sounds expensive. Your just initial consultations and we're looking. Ash, I know really talking figures in the sky and it depends on how energy efficient the house is and the state it's in, if there's already insulation or not or whatever. But there have been a lot of figures about, like typically for a house it's like fairly average DOC, maybe 60 grand is the figure that seems to be the most common that you hear about. That doesn't scare you as a number, does it?
No. So I suppose look and this is maybe where the conversation starts around which road am I heading down, you know, which am I on individual grant or am I on one-stop shop grant? Like the one-stop shop I suppose in terms of its birth story, and I forgive me SEI if I get this wrong please feel free to correct me, but really the name behind it is deep retrofit. Do you know, like that's the name behind this thing. It's just not a very sexy name, so they don't use it. One-stop shop is a much more appealing name, so that's the one that's used. But the idea of it is that it is a deep retrofit. You know, like it's not unheard of at all to be going in digging up floors. You know, like the mess that makes alone is absolutely horrific. But that's the level you're at. You know, you're digging up floors, you're tearing down internal walls. You know, you're bringing it back. Oftentimes near enough close to a shell, you know, a shell at this point with no floor. So you really come back to bare bones, you know. If not trying to be flippant, but if you think you're spending less than 60 grand to do that to a house these days, you're not in that game, you know, you're not at that point.
Then obviously what you're saying.
Say again, sorry, I'm missing half.
No estimate, obviously, then what you're saying.
Well, I suppose, look, the thing always is the upper end is whatever you're dreaming of.
Yeah.
You know, like I say to some people, like, you know, look, are you going for a swimming pool? Like, because that's a whole other level, you know, like it kind of depends. But if you look at like the you know, traditional, I suppose there's a small difference as well between new build and refurb. Refurb has a few sunk costs in it that don't exist in a new build. you know, like for a very start, you got site teardown and clearance, which a new build ideally doesn't have, may have, but generally wouldn't. So rebuilds can often be, you know, have a few more strings attached than a new build. I'm not going to go into the cost of building and materials and all that good stuff. We all know the story.
Get a sense of scale, because it is basically you're embarking on fairly expensive project. So how much would you get from the FDAI? Their maximum amount, because it's actually a fixed amount, isn't it? The maximum amount you get back, 30 grand.
Well, it depends on the elements you go with. So same EDs get a slightly different amount to detached, you know, which get different amount to tourist. So there is a different quantity. So just for example, I'll go down now the route of the attic insulation for an apartment under the one-stop shop is €800. But for a detached house, it's €1,500. So I suppose the numbers are different, but to a degree, it almost doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter what the person in the detached house on the way is getting if you're in an apartment. Your scenario is your scenario. It doesn't really matter what anyone else's scenario is. In terms of the overall, no, there's no limit to like your maximum drawdown. If you qualify, and that's it. You get the grant level. But in terms of, I suppose, the approach, like, yeah, if you're not up at that €60,000, you know, I'm doing a lot of work here level, then quite frankly, you're probably not talking about one stop shop. If what you're looking at doing is, you know, you've got a 1970s detached bungalow, you just bought it, and or maybe you haven't just bought it, maybe, you know, you're a retired couple or whatever, you have this property, and you're looking to just improve it, you know, not do a whole blowout walls and make a fabulous glass box Dermot Bannon job, right? That you just want a slightly more comfortable home, then the one-stop shop is really good for that, do you know? So,
yeah. This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But so for the 60 grand, okay, I'm a bit obsessing over it, but let's say you get 30 grand. It costs you 30 grand. Is that fair to say? Or is it 60 grand plus 30 grand you spend it? 90 grand.
I'm going to give the engineer's answer of possibly like, because like
basically it's a hell of a lot of money you need to finance. Yes. There are a lot of loans at the moment to get these things done, so it is possible to finance and find something that works, I guess.
And it does help as well if your end product, you know, is that B2 level where you're onto that green mortgage. Yeah. Level of things as well, you know, so slightly cheaper finance in the long term, not just the borrowing to get the works done. So, you know, there's combinations there. But in answer to your question, the grant has an upper level, you know. So like I said there, the detached attic insulation is €1,500, regardless of whether it costs you €1,600 or €4,500, you're still getting €1,500. However, if it costs you €1,000, you're getting €1,000.
Yeah.
Right. So you're not making money on this thing. Like, you're not going to be printing cash at the back end of it, right? So like you invariably with this work, it contributes to the cost. It doesn't cover the full cost. Again, it's to try to encourage you to do something that you might otherwise feel is a bit cost prohibitive. So that's
There's a question there. Someone's saying that they rang the SBI and they applied for the grant after it in, which doesn't sound right. You need to get an approval from SEAI that you're going to grant before anything. Isn't that right?
I hate hearing those stories. I must admit, it's awful. Like, unfortunately, it is part of the process, and the way so I have it set up, and in my opinion, quite frankly, quite rightly too, is that it is very linear. You have to apply to SEAI first before you do anything. You can get some advice. Cool, no problem with that whatsoever. But don't engage somebody until you've got SEAI approval, and certainly don't get the work done until you've got SEAI approval. There's a very linear process. You know, it just frankly doesn't function at all to try and get the work done and then retrospectively apply for a grant. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, you won't get it.
No.
So just there's then the, so insulation, I suppose, fairly straightforward in a way, but in the sense that, let's say for the individual grants, you're going to decide with your assessor, your BR assessor, which one to go for, whether external wall, you're going to pump the wall, or you're going to do the attic or whatever. But if you look at a heat pump grant and a PV grant, those are a bit more, it's not forward, isn't it? How does it work for a heat pump grant?
Well, the good news is the PV grant is as straightforward. Actually, it's a bit more straightforward, but we'll get on that in a second.
Yeah.
The heat pump grant has a few more legs to it, okay? But again, look, I'm an engineer. I think it's for a very good reason. I'll couch it with a little bit of background. Heat pumps are excellent when applied correctly. Heat pumps are really not excellent when they're applied incorrectly. Okay, the heat pump grant is really designed around this idea of let's make sure the house is right first and then put the heat pump in. Because quite frankly, if you put a heat pump into a house that's not suited for it, it will end up costing you more money than an equivalent traditional boiler, let's call them, oil, gas, whatever, doesn't really matter. So one of the first steps in the heat pump grant is to get what's called a technical assessment. Again, full disclosure, I provide this technical assessment, so I'm not selling the service, but just saying this is the step that's required for the heat pump grant. What a technical assessor will do is typically, I suppose for this audience in particular, they might have an existing property, they're, you know, planning, or they have designed on a redevelopment of that property, extension possibly, or upgrading or whatever. The question becomes, first of all, weirdly, is the current house heat pump ready? Okay, and the technical component behind that is what's called the HLI, a heat loss index. Heat loss index simply looks at the building's ability to retain heat. Okay, it looks at the roof, wall, floor insulation, the windows, and the ventilation air tightness characteristics. It gives it a number. Okay, if that number is below 2, you are determined to be what's called heat pump ready, and you're good to go. You can get a heat pump; it'd be fantastic, right?
Lost you there. Okay.
If the HLI is below 2, then it's determined to be good, and heat pump will work. Personally, I always recommend that while it will work, I prefer to be down around 1.8, 1.5, kind of ideally. It'll be fine below 2. There's no problem below 2, and technically, you're good to go. Just to really feel the savings from putting in the heat pump, I'd like to be down around 1.5 or 1.8. Okay. Again, these are all numbers. It doesn't matter too much, right? If you're below 2, you get the grant. End of story. If you're not below 2, so if the proposed property, bearing in mind it'll be the existing house with whatever upgrades, plus the extension, and so on, the whole thing gets assessed together. If that is not below 2, the assessor will give recommendations for what is the best thing to do to bring it to below 2 in order to make the heat pump compliant and viable for use. Once that's below 2, then you go off, you do the work, you get the heat pump in, all the rest. the assessor then has to come back and confirm that the works were done and it is now indeed below 2.0, and then the grant gets released. So the heat pump process is more involved, but that's just because the solution is more technical.
But if the assessor comes back, is that an assessment based on paper, or are they actually checking that it's been done properly on site?
No. I'm trying to be very careful. Like, a technical assessor and BR assessor are not there to confirm quality of work. They're there to confirm existence of work. And I suppose that might sound very kind of, but they're the same thing.
Theoretical. So it's whatever was said put in.
Yeah.
Word for it that it was done right.
Yeah. And this is the problem that people come across quite often, to be honest, especially in the one-stop shop side of things, is proof of what is in the wall, right? If you go back to like your assessment and that type of thing, what's actually in that wall? There's three levels of proof. The first level that takes precedence over everything else is what the assessor sees. So if the assessor goes in the attic and sees 200 millimeters of insulation or 8 inches of insulation, that's what's there. You can give them all the promises and decorations of whatever world.
X-ray eyes to see what's in the wall.
Well, in a wall, it's a different thing. But level one is always what you see. What you see as an assessor is what's there, right? Nobody can kind of convince you otherwise. It's what's there. Second level is documentary proof. So documentary proof starts with a declaration from an engineer or architect who was involved with the build to say, this is what is in that wall. So
someone who checks it, let's say for stage payment, or just because the client asked them to check those, done right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Somebody, some professional, by definition, architect or engineer, and who was involved with the build, declares what is in that structure, roof, wall, floor, whatever. The third level is other documentary evidence, which are invoices showing the material delivered to site. Extremely tough to get, like at the right quantities as well. So like you say to me, oh, there's, 300 millimeters of insulation in that wall, and it's all, top of the range, insert insulation manufacturer here, right? It's all that. You go, okay, show me all the invoices with that product on it at the right quantity. And bearing in mind, I know the area of the house. I know the area what insulation should be in the house. If it doesn't match up, it doesn't go in. So very, very tricky level. And then the last level is simply default. If it's an existing building, not a new building, but for an existing building, default said, well, it was built in 2011. In 2011, it's probably this.
Yeah.
But evidence is certainly a very, very tricky thing. And it's evolving, to be fair. It's something SEI have been, they're trying to manage. They have to be very careful not to go too far down one road where you can just, Scouts Honor, that wall is full of squirrels, I promise. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
What's the UV? You have a squirrel, okay. So you kind of have to. They have to be careful, not to let too free rein out.
It is an issue that work isn't done correctly, or that it's not installed as per the manufacturer's instructions, and then your walls not, insulation's not behaving expected to, and then your heat pump is overworking. Have below two, but if it was installed correctly,
because there is a real difference between like the paper assessment. In theory, the engineer says this or the assessor says this, whatever, based on the very fancy Excel document that we use, which is our best approach. It's best efforts are done there. But if like you say, if what's in the wall is not actually what's in the wall, So you're down then. This is kind of one of the reasons why you're down at using registered contractors, using people who are part of that SEI quality team process, people who are being held accountable for their work, and at the end of the day as well, I'll always argue, even if you're doing self-build, right, you should have an engineer associated with the job, okay? Like, you should have someone coming in saying, that's right, that's wrong, whatever, right? They're there to help you. They're not there to try and make your life painful. They're trying to make your life better by giving a better product at the end. And if I can just do a quick sales pitch for engineers all over Ireland, we're very cheap for what we do. Like, comparatively speaking, I think I totted up kind of the the three factors of quantitative errors, architect, and engineer on a recent build, and it was like 2% of final build cost. Do you know? So even if you're in kind of 2%, 3% range, that's really not that much when you consider how much you're going to be spending on your new couch or your new bed or whatever it is going to.
Yeah.
Do you know? Yeah. And so the really, like, spend your money wisely to get good advice.
It is essential because there's no building control inspectors that come and check the different stages. So it is essential to have someone that will independently say, right, this is right, this is wrong. And sure, how would someone know, you know, otherwise?
Yeah, and like, look, especially if you're self-building, you know, like, it's all well and good to say, oh, there's no one coming checking on me, I'm grand, I'm out the gate, I'm safe. It's like, hang on, you're building your own house.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to get away with things. You want to do it right because it's your own house, do you know? So, I don't appreciate that kind of approach anyway.
Going to new builds there. So moving on to heat pumps, to PV panels, just quickly, just run us through that. That's more straightforward, you were saying. So what's...
Yeah, no, PV panels are very straightforward. Again, the nice thing about them is they work. Like, they just work. Like, when it's sunny, they produce electricity. When it's not sunny, they don't. Just to kind of debunk a myth, they don't really make much during winter, right? Like, at all. They will go gangbusters in summertime. So anyone who's got PV panels today, like, they're happy out. Like, mine are absolutely hopping off the roof. It's fantastic. You know, they're rocking away. They are, again, though, a thing of the right solution to the right question. They're not the panacea to every problem. I don't necessarily think they're always the first go-to thing. I think you need to understand your problem before you say, yeah, the PV panels are my solution. And absolutely, before you get on the road of PV panels with battery, are my solution. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the grant process, really straightforward, like, beautifully straightforward. It's all online for a start, so there's no kind of fiddly paperwork and you have to sign, I have to sign, get it back to you, and all that kind of stuff. Doesn't happen. It's all online. You apply again, same as ever. You apply to SEI first, get your approval, and then engage a contractor. They install the works, a BR assessor comes out, confirms, like, again, just confirms the BR rating given the panels are there, and our batteries, whatever. And then just reissues your BR cert. Once that happens in the background, SEI see that a new BR cert has been uploaded, confirms the work's been done, grant is paid.
Yeah.
Very simple.
Although there's no more for but there is a grant for the EV charger, which applies to both new builds and existing houses. So at least that is something. If you're
it's one of the only ones. PV, I believe PV and heat pumps apply from houses up to 2021. So they're the one exception that they're, you know, they're a bit later in the timescale. Everything else is older houses and pre, I think, pre 2011.
Yeah.
Which is, you know.
For heat pumps, I think, 2000. The others, isn't it?
Heat pump systems 2021, heat pump. So all the heat pumps are before 2021, occupied before 2021. All the insulation is occupied before 2011. And then I believe solar PV is equally before 2021, although I do stand to be corrected for that.
Okay. And the good thing about PV as well, is a generation tariff. So if you export electricity, you get a bit of money for that. That's pretty nice. Does it help with the bills? Like, you have PV panels. Do you have it for that? You're not getting much tax rebates as well.
I think, like, my approach on all this stuff is, if you're at that level of relying on that stuff to justify the decision, it's not a good decision. The priority should be to displace your own electricity use. Like, if you're someone who's on current tariff, you're probably paying about 40 cents a kilowatt hour for your electricity at the moment, right? So if every kilowatt hour you can displace, every kilowatt hour you can stop using from the grid and, you know, generate yourself with your own panels, is 40 cents saved. So kind of the hierarchy then is, okay, well, if I can't use it immediately, I'll store it in some way, shape or form. Mm-hmm. There's two really good ways of storing it. It's kind of three, but I'll talk about two properly. One is simply store it. Don't worry about batteries. Store in hot water. Just store it in your immersion system. You know, get something like an iBoost or whatever. One of those kind of units that, if it sees that your solar panels are exporting electricity to the grid, it goes, oh, hang on, I could put on some hot water. I'll put on the immersion. You know, the Irish people's fear of immersion. I'll put on the immersion and give you some hot water, you know? So if you have an oil boiler, it's a really good solution. PV panel with an e-boost system are equivalent, whatever, you know, whatever will use the excess energy to heat the water through the immersion in your cylinder. Really good way of doing it. Like, that's an excellent way of doing it. The next level down from that really is, go down the route of chemical batteries, right, or just batteries, people know. And that gives you the opportunity then to store your PV that you made too much of during the, you know, during the sunny period, and use it in the other periods where you might need it. Also, little side tip, it gives the option to use nitrate electricity to charge the batteries in the wintertime, right? When your PV is doing absolutely nothing. And I promise you, it'll do nothing in the wintertime. But it gives you that option to try and offset your electricity usage by using nitrate electricity in the daytime. The last level is, obviously, you've got your EV. It's grand to try and marry the two, but it can be a bit finicky at times. You know, being at home for a start during peak periods, that kind of stuff. Not everyone is. Some people are, whatever, but not always. And then finally, yes, you get paid for exporting energy onto the grid. I would never rely on it for a few reasons, I suppose, but mainly, to be fair to anyone on that side of things, their job isn't really there to make you money, right? You're not going to get your 40 cent a kilowatt hour rate. You're probably going to get 6 or 8 or whatever it is, you know.
It is,
but you're better off doing the other things first.
Yeah.
Do you know? And look, I suppose I'm a bit more old school in this regards. A touch. I don't have batteries yet. System yet. I'm on the verge of it, I think. But right now I'm still running my numbers. I'm still kind of looking and saying, look, does it really make sense for us to do this just yet? But we're the kind of company, we're the kind of people. I'm at home, so we're the people at home who, you know, we'll run around and put on the dishwasher. You know, we'll be like, oh, we're generating power. Dishwasher on. You know, and heat washing machine on, and that kind of stuff at the appropriate times. So the first objective always is use it. Use it straight away.
Yeah. There's lots of losses, I suppose, as well with the other systems. But so how much is the grant? How much does it cost to put a unit in, and how much is the grant?
For the solar PV?
Yeah, solar PV.
So solar PV, you get €900 per kilowatt for the first 2 kilowatts. So if you put 1 kilowatt in, you get €900. If you put 2 kilowatts in, you get €1,800. After that, it's an additional €300. So if you put 2 kilowatts in, you get €1,800. If you put 3 kilowatts in, you get €2,100.
They're basically doing what you're saying you should be doing, which is they're incentivizing to put less panels, just basically enough to sustain their need. You don't really want people exporting. No. They're trying to encourage you to not have a battery, and there's no more batteries. So the idea is just use what's being generated on the spot, I guess. Yeah. 2 panels get that far. Two kilowatts, I mean, is it?
Well, I suppose it depends on your own particular circumstance. Like our house, for example, is very electricity heavy, by which I mean we have a heat pump, we have an MVHR, which is the air ventilation system. Obviously, we have electric lighting. You know, our cooker is electric. You know, so we're very electric heavy. And if you're a household that literally only has like lights, TV, and your chargers off of electricity, then quite frankly, 2 kilowatts is probably more than enough for you. Now, the question has to be asked: are you there to use it when it's available? So, like, you know, it's available nowadays from kind of, you know, 8 or 9 in the morning through to maybe 4 or 5 in the evening, depending on your orientation. At a very strong level, it's available kind of outside those levels at lower levels. But you know, are you there to avail of it? Are you there to benefit from it? Because if you're not, maybe it's not the perfect solution.
And how much does it cost to install panels these days? Do you have an idea of that sort of?
I did my homework on this one for you, just in case. You're back. So. A 3 kilowatt PV system will cost in the region of €7,000 installed. Okay, so that's everything done, you know, home and hosed, so they say. Minus the grant of €2,100, because there's 3 kilowatt PV. So you're coming in at €4,900 on that. Again, I don't sell them. I just pulled this down off of somebody there recently. So, you know, you're in that kind of region, right? So, you know, I suppose there's a few ways to think about it. A 2,000 euro grant is always nice to get. You know, that's cash you wouldn't otherwise have to spend. The other way of looking at that is, okay, it's going to cost me 5,000 euro, there or thereabouts. How much energy will I save on my bill from that? One way to kind of guesstimate that is to say, well, what's your current annual electricity bill? Do you know, like just kind of, a lot of people go into this decision not knowing what that number is. Go and find out what the number is. Ideally, not just the last 12 months, ideally kind of the last 24 months, pull out all the bills. There should only be, you know, 12 of them, one every 2 months, so it's not horrible. If you have a smart meter, you'll know even more information about your usage. But have, you know, get into it a little bit. It's not horrible stuff. You know, get into it, understand your usage, understand what you need, and say, well, like, if all your electricity usage, especially if you have a smart meter nowadays, and you can see, well, I don't use any electricity during the day, all of my electricity is, you know, at night between 8 and, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, whatever, when I'm gaming or whatever it might be, PV panels are not going to be my thing. However, if, you know, you've got a decent amount of usage during the day, and you're, okay, well, a PV panel is a good marriage.
Yeah.
And then use that information. You can go very analog, look at the bills and just break down, divide by 31 days or wherever it might be to get an average daily quantity. But try and go in to the conversation with a sense of it yourself. Don't just ring up the guys and go, oh, how much PV do I need? You sell PV, how much do I need? And they go, well,
a lot.
We have a warehouse full of PV. You can have it all, you know? So they're really good people, to be fair. They really are good. And some companies out there are excellent. They're doing this a long, long time. But I always take people who sell the advice a grain of salt, to be fair.
So do you have to go with someone on the SCAI list for £50? You would.
Come on.
Obviously. Up here, so heat pumps, how much is the grant and how much is it costing these days?
So again, it's a touch of how long is a piece of string. So the grant is easier to talk about. So the grant, first of all, for the technical assessment, there's a 200 euro grant for the technical assessment, and they tend to cost around kind of 400 to 500 euro depending. If it's an enormous house, it might be more than that, but that's the kind of region they cost. So you're getting 200 euro grant towards that. That's not too bad. For a heat pump system, sorry, I'm literally reading off the sheet here, as you can probably tell. So a home built before 2021, all houses would get a 6,500 euro heat pump grant. Apartments, however, get a 4,500 euro grant. So slightly reduced for apartments. And I want to say there's controls there too. I can't find them right now. No, heating controls, 700 euro.
700 euro for controls.
Yeah.
That's like, it's going to cost a lot to sell it. Then what's the going rate?
Well, and this is where the piece of string bit comes in. So if we go back to like my original commentary about heat pumps, which was that they're a great solution to the right problem. The way heat pumps like to work best is low temperature and for a long time. Okay. So a boiler will deliver you radiator temperature at like 70 to 90 degrees C, you know, really high temperature water. A heat pump would prefer to be at 35 degrees C. That would be its preferred position, okay? It can run a radiator, right? But it'll deliver water to the radiator at 55 degrees C. So you will either have to get your radiators running longer or do something to them, maybe make them bigger. You can activate them as well, which means putting little fans in behind them to get them sucking more air. You know, you can do a few different things, but ideally, your house is already perfectly set up. What does a perfect setup look like for a house? Well, first of all, obviously, well insulated, you know, well set up in that regards. And quite frankly, ideally already has underfloor heating or large radiators. It doesn't have to be underfloor heating, but the very simple thing about underfloor heating is it's a big radiator. That's all it is. People think it's extremely fancy and we have it and it's great. It is great. But it's just a big radiator. That's all it really, really is. So it just allows your heat pump to run at a low temperature, which it likes doing. The minute you come away from low temperature or you come away from long run hours, then you're starting to reduce the efficiency of the heat pump. It doesn't like working in those kind of conditions. So ideally, if you have a house that's already well set up, then you're not going to be a million miles away from 6,500 euro. You know what I mean? You're probably going to be in around maybe the 8-10 grandish kind of region. You're not going to be horribly, you know, out of people say out of pocket. I don't think that's a fair comment to make. You know, you're going to get a good return, I suppose, probably how I look at it. Now, to be fair, by comparison, a decent oil boiler is probably something in around $2,000, do you know? So, like, compare apples and apples here. Like, yeah, you're getting $6,500 grant, but you're still paying maybe $2,000 to $3,000 on top of that, ignoring any work that have to get done, where an oil boiler is $2,000. However, you know, oil boiler does a different job. It's a different fish entirely, you know, and obviously you have to have the conversation about why are you going down the heat pump road? Why are you doing that? What's your objective here?
Well, you don't put the boiler anymore, but gas is being phased out as well, aggressively. So it's going to be, there won't be much fairly soon, so you might as well get the grant now that you're at it.
I don't know about that comment, to be honest. As a full disclosure, I used to work for the gas board way back when. My role there was developing renewable natural gas. So you hear about the biogas, all sorts of things. That's what I was involved with. I suppose my very simple answer to that question is there's 2 million households or homes in Ireland, 2.1 I think at last count. There's a significant problem where, you know, 2/3 roughly of those will not be heat pump compliant, and they're also not on, like, you know, not very suitable for alternative means. So they will need some form of traditional heating. Now, this is a whole other conversation on itself.
And I have a gas boiler, old house. Like, there's not a hope I'll put a heat pump here.
Yeah exactly. Exactly. So again, it's the right solution to the right problem. The overall solution ultimately for that kind of stuff will be things like the bio LPG that I think Flowgas have already started to roll out for domestic properties. You've got your boilers that are coming out now, bio oil ready, which means the reconstituted vegetable oil, or RVO. You know, it's the old chip fat, you know, maybe back in the 80s or 90s, you probably don't remember, Astrid, but there was people using that to run their cars. Way better approach to that nowadays, but similar kind of idea, renewable fuel, you know, and it's still a liquid, it's still a gas, but it's just not fossil, and that's the difference.
Yeah. Okay, I think we'll leave it at that. Was there anything you have to know that's very pressing about things that we haven't covered? I think we covered most things, but...
I suppose all I would say is if you're going down a road of trying to figure out what to do, right? There's three words that I give everybody, right? The first objective has to be reduce. Just reduce your usage, right? That's what you're trying to do. So you're going to try and insulate, you're going to try and do air tightness, you're going to try and do something like that. But the objective is reduce. I think you asked me before, like, what's the biggest bang for your buck you can do? Attic insulation is a simple question. It's a simple answer. If you have a bungalow and you have an attic and there's less than 200 meters of insulation up there, go down to Woodies or get down to Cork Builders Providers or whomever, get your roll of insulation and get it up there. It's the cheapest thing you can do. It'll have the biggest impact. So reduce is the first objective. Once you've done whatever reductions you can, then you start looking at the other things like, you know, reusing MVHRs, renewables, PV panels, heat pumps, how to solve the problem you're left with. But don't try and solve the problem first. Reduce the problem first and then try and solve it.
Okay, cool. And we didn't say there was ventilation in the one-stop shop. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation. And how much insulation is too much is another question. But we'll come back to all those.
There's no such thing as too much insulation. There is such thing as diminishing all returns. So beyond a certain point, it becomes less efficient.
And less, yeah, it doesn't really make sense to start putting more in financially.
No, exactly. There are limits. So, there are absolutely.
There are kind of sweet spots for insulation as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll talk about those topics another time. Thanks so much, Roger.
No problem. Take care. See you.
That's Bye-bye. It for this Self Build Plus podcast episode. Tune in next time for more tips and advice from experts and self builders alike. And make sure to explore everything Self Build Plus has to offer. The Self Build Plus journey guides you through the process of building and home improving. The Self Build Plus forum allows you to share and learn from other self builders. While the Self Build Plus videos and our Self Build Plus virtual events are packed with information and advice. With Self Build, stop dreaming, start building.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.